Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. There's a lot going on this week, whether you're following the health care negotiations in Washington, D.C., or maybe you're going to pay attention to something else like the NCAA basketball tournament, which is down to the Sweet 16. But today's show, we're going to make things a little more local in the stories that we bring you. In the second half of the show, we'll be joined by Ann Kinzel from the Ames Progressive Alliance. We'll be hearing from guests that Ann brings with her about something that they've been working on for quite a while now, the Ames Solar Initiative. In the studio, we'll have Don Kamm from the Electric Bureau in the City of Ames and Steve Bernard, who's from Cedar Falls. He's the utilities director there, and he'll be joining us by phone. So stay tuned for that. A little later, we'll have an interview about Dawat, which is an Indian cultural feast and fundraiser sponsored by an organization at ISU called Sankalp. And that will be on Sunday, so we'll be hearing from those folks who organize that. But before that, we are turning our attention to an event that's happening this weekend. There will be a Black Lives Matter march and rally taking place in Ames on Saturday. And with us now is Sean Appleton Carlton, who is associated with Black Lives Matter Iowa and who started the Black Lives Matter Iowa Facebook group. Hello, Sean.
Hello.
And you told me that you just came from work.
Yeah. I work overnights at Mary Greeley. So, yeah, I just came off of work, and the hospital is just skipping a jump from here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, great. We're glad that you could come over, and you didn't have to drag yourself out of bed, at least, like our engineer, Evan, had to do. Thanks, Evan. Good morning. So let's talk about Black Lives Matter. So just to orient our listeners, maybe just say a little bit about what Black Lives Matter is and what it is not.
Black Lives Matter is a growing grassroots movement across the United States and the world. It started in Northern California in the Oakland area. Fittingly enough, that seems to be a hotspot of radical politics or, new politics, new wave mm-hmm. politics. And it's spread across the United States in the years since about 2012, 2013. And we've also seen evidence of it popping up abroad as well, as I just said. So it goes in England, France, South Africa, and it's just kind of continuing to grow in popularity and grow in sophistication.
And the goals or the philosophy of Black Lives Matter is Black Lives Matter.
Well, yeah, that is the overarching philosophy. That is the linchpin of everything that we do. The actual guiding principles are obviously much more nuanced, and some are very broad. Others are kind of tailor-made for local areas, kind of like what I'm doing. And, it is a continuously evolving organic movement that is just kind of gripping the world.
And that's kind of the exciting part of it, is that it is so organic.
Yeah. It's exciting, and it's also very liberating, too, because, I think the lack of, a tiered organization, not to say that tiered organizations don't have their place, there's advantages to that, too. But the fact that it's very decentralized gives people who want to do this sort of thing a lot of leeway in terms of what they can do, in terms of things of what they want to talk about, things they want to bring to the platform. It should be said that you shouldn't go crazy with that and completely just dissociate yourself from what I think is the core of the movement itself. I think that does a huge disservice, and I've tried mightily to not do that myself. I've tried to do things and bring up things I think that are in the spirit of it. But the fact that it does not have a centralized office, president, vice president, what have you, and there's no sort of sense of high command, not any that I can detect. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to find out, but I've not really come across anything that even remotely resembles that. But that is a good thing, and it gives you just a wide breadth of options.
A lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
So there are some kind of national goals and philosophies and orientations, but then there are obviously issues that are more important here in Iowa that you want to call people's attention to.
Right.
Could you tell us a bit about what some of those issues are?
Well, in Iowa, I mean, broadly speaking, Iowa, there is things that I think a lot of people have either heard about or know about specifically. There are things like, say, the mass incarceration rates in Iowa. I mean, Iowa's black population is roughly, and it swings back and forth between, you know, census years here and there, but it's roughly goes back and forth between about either 2% or 3% of the state of Iowa, and it stays rather consistently at about like a quarter of its prison population. So that's a wildly disproportionate number of black people in Iowa who are in the Iowa prison system. There's also issues concerning private prisons, which literally gives people, industries, financial incentives to incarcerate people. Not only incarcerate more people, but to incarcerate them for longer periods of time. It's kind of moved away from the prison system in this country. It's kind of evolved from once it was just incarceration. Then at some point, I think in the 60s or 70s, it kind of started going towards rehabilitation, emphasizing that as, you know, and rehabilitating an offender and putting them back into society, making them productive, And now it's kind of gone back full circle and is now all about just incarcerating. And now there is just a fat paycheck waiting for you if you get on this bandwagon. So there is that. And also things like the school of prison pipeline. You notice how all these things are interconnected. They are linked to one another. So schools that don't do a service to black and brown children or any child of color that routinely fail them and don't give them an actual good first step into the world are just unknowingly, maybe unknowingly, feeding that monster.
Those issues have gotten some attention at the state level. At least occasionally. What about here in Ames? Are there, again, kind of focusing in on the more local, are there particular issues that are different than the state issues?
There are some issues that are, I think, a bit different than the state issues, but I think in some ways they're kind of identical. So just speaking of Ames in particular, you know, we have an issue with the disproportionate literacy rates in terms of how black children or brown children rate in comparison to their white counterparts. So that's been a major driving force for us for the last several months, especially in light of the fact that we have school board elections coming up in the fall. So there is a tremendous opportunity there for us to make a real meaningful impact so we can actually see the fruits of our labor in that sense if we do it right. And there is just events that have come up recently that a lot of people have heard about, like just last fall, not that long ago, everyone heard about the white supremacist literature that was being passed around campus. Just things like that. You hear instances of minority students on ISU campus, for example, being, you know, physically harassed at times, and just all these things here and there that you just kind of pick up on as you're just kind of getting more and more in tune to what's going on in your area. Now, that's not necessarily special to Ames, but it is a part of Ames, and I feel like there is a strong contingent of people in this town who seem to just kind of have blinders onto that, or they don't, one, want to believe it, or two, see it at all. Like they just walk around and it's just, you know, they stay within their own little world and don't really take notice of anything or hear much of anything. But yeah, it seems to really surprise people a lot, particularly people who are in high officials in this town. When we tell them, when they hear stories of that I just told you, you know, particularly in the school system, or, you know, things like, you know, the rates of graduation rates to black children versus white children is tremendously disproportionate, or has a huge gap. Or rates of the way black children are punished or disciplined by the school system.
Right.
You know, they're much more severe than they are to white kids. So a lot of people are really just taken aback when you bring that to their attention. They're like, no, really? Or you tell them something like stories like they pull their kid out of a certain school system because of that. You know, really? Yeah, really.
Yeah, Ames has such a reputation for having one of the best school systems in the state.
Right.
And people just see it as a very tolerant, place where everyone is accepted and equally successful. But the reality is that's not quite the way it is.
Right.
So that kind of brings us to the idea of the march. So why did you decide to, whoever was involved in making the decision as part of Black Lives Matter, why have a march and rally right now and for what purpose?
Well, to be honest, the march and rally was kind of like the first thing I wanted to do when I started, thinking this whole thing up. So inevitably, I wanted to do something like that. As I've gone through this and as I've become a bit more learned in this whole thing about this grassroots organizing sort of thing, I've learned that the march and rally, that's big, that's important, that's nice, but that's not probably the most important thing of grassroots organizing. That being said, it has its place and it's still worthwhile to do it. But the reason why I did it, one, was that, and the two is that it's a good way to actually, again, bring out the things that you want to talk about and put it out there in a public sort of way. So it's kind of like a very dramatic way of forcing something from dark into light. And in that way, it works well to, get people to, one, open their eyes, and two, you might even get more recruits out of it, mm-hmm. too. It's like, mm-hmm. ooh, wow, this is actually happening. I didn't know about this. It's about community in the mm-hmm. end. It's about advocating for some of the people in this town who are not doing very well, and any demographic who are not doing very well, and letting them know that there are people out here who care about the fact that you're not doing very well, and we are here for you, so here we are.
Mm-hmm. So it's not in response to a particular event?
No.
It's not reactive
to anything. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. No, I mean, it's not a response to something as sensational as, a body of a dead black man mm-hmm. in the street from a police shooting, unarmed black man from a police shooting. It's not something that quite severe, thankfully. We don't want that. No one wishes that. And in that sense, that's kind of, I get the feeling, almost hampered us because, things like that hugely galvanize people into action. You get people angry, they move, they do things. And so we have a much more less sensational way of approaching this, but it's nonetheless important. So you have like I said, the school board elections and the kind of ripple effects that will come mm-hmm. from that. So, no, it's not reactive to anything. It's very much proactive.
Okay. So let's get into the details then. Tell us when and where.
When will be tomorrow Saturday. Afternoon at Brookside Park. We are going to start amassing there around 2 o'clock. That's when we want people to kind of start showing up, 2 o'clock. And thereabouts, and then from
Brookside Park, like near 6th Avenue.
Right, okay. Exactly. Right across the street from the skating park.
Okay.
And so from there, about 15 minutes, 20 minutes out, we're going to start to actually do the march. And the march will go up 6th Street. The plan will then go take a turn onto Northwestern, go by Wheatsfield, mm-hmm. and then ultimately we'll go through Main Street and we'll go end up at the United Church of Christ, and that's where the rally point will have. And they've agreed to rent us a space. Hopefully it will accommodate everything that we need. And then we'll have the rally there, and then we'll have featured speakers. I have a few people lined up who will speak. I'll speak, obviously. I'll probably be talking through the whole thing in one sense or another. And then we'll have a few others there too. And then, We'll open it up to the public, too, and kind of have a public forum, because we want people to share their experiences here, too. So yeah, that's the plan.
Okay, and everyone's welcome and encouraged to come who's interested in this movement.
Right, everyone is welcome and encouraged to come. We especially encourage black people and other people of color to show up, because, again, this is for them. Make no mistake, this is for them. This is on their behalf. This is an advocacy movement that is with them in mind. But we also encourage allies as well. I know we'll have several of them. We'll have several white allies and otherwise showing up. And, yeah. But otherwise, yes, it's open to everybody.
Okay. So I know at rallies and marches like this, signs are a big deal. And people put a lot of thought into signs. Have you made your signs yet?
We had a sign making party.
Okay.
Not that long ago, where people showed up and crafted their own signs. So we had a number of ideas. We had, you know, the kind of the more typical ones you tend to see, like "No Lives Matter Until Black Lives Matter." Some of them got a bit creative, like "Black Lives Are Gold" or things like that. There's a number of them that people kind of popped off here and there. I can't really remember too many of them right now. I'm too tired. I've been up all night. So,
people could make signs also about particular issues, like about incarceration rates, or those kinds of things.
So you can make signs saying "end mass incarceration." Mm-hmm. You can even bring into it things like that are related to it, like the ISU using prison labor to manufacture furniture and whatnot. So things like that.
That's gotten some publicity on campus.
Yes,
there have been some articles
in
the Daily, and so. We have a minute or two left. Can I ask you, what's your story? Why did you – because you're really the person, at least one of the people, who brought Black Lives Matter to Iowa in any kind of tangible form.
Sure.
Why did you feel compelled to do that and invest all this time and energy into it?
I think it was just a culmination of things to come, or a culmination of things I had been doing for the last couple of years. I have been following Black Lives Matter ever since its inception, ever since Trayvon Martin back in 2012. And I've been watching it just kind of grow and grow and grow, and just kind of monitoring how it actually is starting to manifest and what kind of shapes and directions it takes. And so, yeah, I just kind of thought it was just time. And, you know, I think it was partially due to the fact that there was a lot of nationwide attention to a lot of things having to deal with black people in the black community in just the last year or two, you know, namely the, you know, seemingly endless names of black men who have been shot by police officers, unarmed black men for dubious circumstances. Again, it was not like there was anything like that in my immediate living area, but it seemed like it was time to bring Ames into it. It was time to bring it into the town. You know, Ames likes to pride itself, for the most part, I think, on being very progressively leaning. It just made sense.
Okay. So say one more time, details about the march, and we'll put that information on our website as well.
The march will start at Brookside Park on 6th Street, across from the skate park. It'll go up 6th Street. It'll then turn onto Northwestern. It'll go past Wheat's Field. It'll then go into Main Street, and then it'll then come home, finally, at United Church of Christ, and that's where the rally point will be. So it's starting at 2 o'clock and kind of more or less officially ending at 4 o'clock. So it's about a 2-hour space of time. So, yeah.
Okay, so if people can't make it to the start, they know where to pick it up along the route.
Yeah, it should be fairly obvious.
Okay, so hopefully people will turn out for
hopefully,
that.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in on your way home from work, Sean.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Sean Appleton Carlton from Black Lives Matter and one of the organizers of the march and rally on Saturday, tomorrow, in Ames. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Something else that is going on this weekend is an event called Dawat, which means feast, and it's sponsored by SANCALP, a student organization at ISU. Kay Puttock from KHOI spoke with the organizers about what to expect at this gathering and what its purpose is. So we'll be hearing from Yash Solanki, the public relations officer for SANCALP, and Viraj Mute, the event coordinator.
I'm talking to two students from Iowa State who are representing an organization called Sankalp, which raises money for charitable projects in India. And they're going to tell us about some of the projects that their organization supports, and particularly about an event that's coming up on Sunday, March the 26th, a special event at which they raise money for these charities. Now, we'll hear a little bit about the charities later, but Yash, why don't you tell us a bit about this event on Sunday?
Daawat is our annual fundraiser dinner, and we'll be inviting all our patrons who help us raise funds, and we'll be presenting the projects that have been proposed to Sankalp to our patrons. And after these presentations, our patrons will vote on which projects they preferred and which ones they feel should receive the funds. And at the same time, we'll be giving our patrons a glimpse of Indian culture through various cultural performances and through some authentic Indian cuisine. And also, we'll be having silent auctions for Indian handicrafts, which again help us raise money and also give them, allow them to take back souvenirs that we've got from India.
Yes, I've been to one of these events a few years ago, and I must say it was a very enjoyable evening. As you say, Indian cultural experience, dancing and music and a slideshow, and also delicious food. And of course, it's in a good cause. Let's talk about some of the projects that you'll be voting on this year. Viraj, why don't you tell us about some of these projects?
This year we have 10 projects which are up for voting, and these projects are in different areas focusing on education, women empowerment, and sustainable development. I just want to talk about two of these projects. Actually, we are doing it in partnership with the Sehgal Foundation, which is based here in Des Moines. That project focuses on setting up sanitation facilities or toilets in a school in rural India. And another project is we are helping in setting up, maintaining and running a school in the northeast part of India. This is aimed towards providing basic elementary education to shepherd children in that part who don't have access to elementary education.
Well, those certainly sound like very good causes. Perhaps people don't fully understand why it's necessary to have a project like building toilets at a school. Perhaps you could say a bit more about that.
Yes. While government agencies are doing a good job at providing sanitation facilities, a lot of these rural areas in India still exist where people don't have access to toilets. This raises issues with respect to hygiene and sanitation and even safety of women. And this also has an impact on education because some of these schools don't have access to sanitation facilities. And this is where this project fits in, is that providing good sanitation facilities to these students will not only ensure safety, but it will also make sure that there is no obstacle in them getting education.
Right. Yes, this was some years ago, and I'm sure things have improved since then. But it was about, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago now, traveling in India. And it was just very difficult if you were going a long distance and you were female, especially, to find somewhere to go to the bathroom, except in the bushes, if you're covering a long distance. Okay. So especially if you're a young girl in school, this must be a big embarrassment, I'm sure, if you just have to go in the bushes. Okay, good. So Viraj, can you tell us how many of these projects are usually funded each year?
Each year we fund roughly 5 to 6 of these projects, depending on how many funds are raised.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, you mentioned education at a school. Now, that sounds like the kind of project that will be dependent on continued funding from you or from somebody. Do you see what I'm asking?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a one-time thing. Here's some money to build a school.
Definitely. And that's why all of our projects need to be sustainable. This is one of the most important criteria which we have before we put them up for fun. Voting on Daawat, so that patrons can vote on them. So these projects, if they are not sustainable, we do not fund them. We don't fund the unsustainable parts of a project. The best example would be building or helping maintaining schools, giving them students, school supplies, blackboards, things they can use to impart education. And that is something which is really sustainable. Education is sustainable. We don't fund for, say, salaries of project managers and things like that, right, which are actually not sustainable. And we ensure in the beginning that they have funds to get these different...
To get the salaries and so on.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anything which we cannot fund, we make sure that they have funds to get that. Otherwise, we do not put a project up for funding.
Okay, that's very interesting, because that was going to be one of my questions. How do you research these charities and make sure that they're worthy and that they're efficient?
Oh, yeah.
Because, again, in India, I saw some charities which were well-meaning, but really not efficient and weren't really raising any money.
No, and that is a very good concern, especially since we are contacting them from a completely different continent. But we have multiple checkpoints to ensure that we are giving funds to good charities. The most important checkpoint is they need to have one accreditation from the Indian government called FCRA. That is given by the government to NGOs after doing substantial background checks and credibility checks so that they can receive foreign funds. So that is the first checkpoint we have in deciding whether an NGO is credible or not. The next checkpoint is we have multiple forms they have to submit, contact forms where they have to provide information regarding their project, very detailed breakdown of their budget. And if that project is selected, we do not give them all the funds directly. It's given in installments. Mm-hmm. Only after they give us a nice, well-written and well-explained report of how they have used their funds along with receipts. And only then these different funds are disbursed.
Okay.
And another checkpoint is these are NGOs which we try to work with NGOs where we have contacts. For example, the project Segal Foundation, we have a contact right here in Des Moines.
Right.
The project I was talking about, the project about the school, children education in Northeast India, that was a project brought to us by Sankal Patron. Her family member works in that NGO. So we have personal contacts which we can call them. We can kind of talk with them and figure out how things are going.
Right.
And so we have multiple checkpoints to make sure that.
Okay. Now, Yash, would you like to talk about some of the other projects that people will be voting on?
Well, one project that I found really interesting was one proposed by an organization called SOVA. And basically, they've noticed in a specific region in India, there's a lack of nutrition in the diets of children. So what they've proposed to Sankalp is that they'll be helping the schools build kitchen gardens on their on their campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they'll be, through these kitchen gardens, they'll be growing vegetables, which they'll include in the daily meals of these children and help them gain more nutrition from their diets. And they, previously the same NGO has done a project in which they implemented fortified rice in the diets of these children to help them gather and gain some more nutrition from their diets. And this, when we saw this project, seeing that they've done a previous project on the same lines gave them more credibility, and mm-hmm. it showed us that this project will have a better impact on the children.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a very easy project to understand. It's very educational for the children to raise their own food, and then they can eat it. That sounds terrific. Okay, any more?
Well, there's another project called VIRD, and by an NGO called VIRD. What this project will be doing is basically, so this NGO has previously taken a project in which they've built a shelter or a sort of house called a Swadhar home, in which they house women and children who are victims of trafficking or domestic violence or homelessness. And what they realized is these women, while they were safe and they were safer in these houses, because they did not have a job while staying in these houses and they did not have an income, they were facing a lot of psychological problems and they weren't able to supply for their children well. So they've proposed that they give these women vocational training so that they can be more independent and they can be self-sufficient and they can generate income to supply for themselves and their families better. So these women will be taught to make paper cups and plates, which is pretty much a universal demand nowadays.
Sure.
and it'll help these women move towards more independence.
Okay, well, this has given people a taste of the kind of charities that they'll be voting on. Why don't we remind them again about the event on Sunday and the contact information? Mm-hmm. So this will be from 5 till 8 p.m. at the Oakwood Road Church in Ames, from 5 to 8. And if they want more information, they can call 515-735-8989 or the email vris@iastate.edu. Or they can email Sankalp, that's the name of the organization, sankalp.iastate@gmail.com. And again, this is on Sunday at 5 to 8 p.m. And certainly I can say when I was there, it's excellent food and a very enjoyable evening.
And we also have a Facebook page to make it easier for people to find us. So that's Sankalp-Iowa State University.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks to Kay Puddock for that report and for keeping us informed about cultural events happening in the community and also the work that local organizations do. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to Local Talk. And now we turn to our monthly visit from the Ames Progressive Alliance. Ann Kinzel and Victoria Sapinski have joined us, and I think we're going to be delving deeper into a topic that you've been working on for quite a while, the Ames Solar Initiative, but it's really been heating up, I've heard.
Okay, that's the plan to visit that, and thanks to KHOI and this opportunity for the Ames Progressive Alliance, and we truly do appreciate it. So jumping in, our guests today are Don Kamm, who is the director of the electrical services for the City of Ames, and Steve Bernard, who we're going to have on the phone. He is the Cedar Falls Utilities Director of Customer Service and Business Development. For our listeners, let's just do a brief recap. The Ames Community Solar Initiative partnered with the Ames Progressive Alliance over the past year to advocate for a community solar project, and the City of Ames got on board, and citizens will soon be able to invest directly in solar-powered electricity generated in Ames. The goal is to have the community solar garden with a 1.5 megawatt solar array designed, constructed, and in service by the end of this year. But what exactly is community solar? We could do a whole hour on that subject, but let's just go with this brief definition for now. Community solar for Ames would be a solar array located on a property near or in Ames that collects solar power to add to our electric generating capacity. Solar energy would be captured and provide electrical power and or financial benefit to our community members. Under the community solar program, the actual generation of solar electricity does not occur at the customer's home or business site. Instead, the customer subscribes to a portion of the shared solar array located in a solar garden. What that means is that any City of Ames electric customer can participate in clean energy production by investing in the Ames solar project, by investing in a certain number of square feet in a solar array, for example. Then you would recoup your investment over time by receiving credit for the electricity generated by this investment, that is the electricity generated by the aforementioned square footage. So we've invited Don Kamm so he can update us on what still needs to be done to make an Ames solar garden a reality. And Steve Bernard will fill us in on how Cedar Falls was able to start its community solar initiative. You can also find information on the project on the City of Ames website and at the Ames Community Solar Initiative website, which is amescommunitysolar.org. So turning to Don. Hi, Don. Welcome.
Good morning.
It's great to have you here and to tell us where we need to go with this community solar garden. So first, curious about what next events need to take place for this project to come fully online in Ames.
Really, right now we have three basic goals or things that need to be done here in the short term, we have to find a site, and I could talk a little bit more about that. We've spent a considerable amount of time driving through the city looking for, I won't call it an ideal site, but a site that will work, and I can touch on a lot of the ones that we've looked at. Once we find a site, or in conjunction with finding a site, we currently are putting together a request for proposal. This is a formal document that will go out by the city's purchasing department looking for vendors, and we'll say, here's one or two sites that we're looking at. You know, what would be your proposal? And we're not looking just at cost. We're looking at the quality of the panels, the design. You know, do we make it what's called fixed? In other words, they're just put into the ground, or are they the type that would tilt and follow the sun? So we're looking at designs like that. The third piece, then, is to really put meat on the bones to what you were talking about before with how do customers participate? How do we get them involved? How can they contribute or be part of that square footage you were talking about? And there's a lot of details that go into that. For example, let's say I want to move to a different house. Does my solar travel with me? If I'm moving to Nevada, you know, what happens? And things like that. So there's a lot of the details that people are going to want to know before they're ready to sign up for the project. And that's the third piece that we're working on.
Okay. And so this RFP, has that gone out yet?
The RFP is under development. In fact, I'm getting a draft of it from our consultant today. And once we've gone through that, there is a process where it comes back to council, and it'll come back to council after we're done with the RFP. But it has not gone out yet, but we're very, very close.
Okay. And will that consulting company answer some of those questions about what happens if you move? And
they're
that's
helping
something
us,
that we will do as a city.
Yep. They're helping us create that. Part of our requirements with our consultant is we're going to have at least one or two workshops here in the community as that's being developed to talk about it so that there's some give and take. So we're not just out there, here's the program, take it or leave it. We want a community involvement to make sure that we design it where people are more and more interested.
Okay. Well, music to my ears. Anytime that we're involving the community and taking advantage of the knowledge that we have here and that it's participatory. So I want to just loop back to the site again. So you said a site that works. So what qualifies as a site that works?
Well, our consultant's already been out here. He's written the book on putting solar, for example, on landfills and things like that. And we went and looked at the landfill site. Unfortunately, the shape of our closed landfill, he said, really wouldn't work unless you redid that. So that's kind of been taken off the list. Hmm. We've looked at property that's in the flood plain, which is a possibility. Putting it in the flood way isn't. So we're looking at a couple of sites there. The ones that really are appealing both to the consultant and we think would get a good turnout is we started first by looking at city property, because if we can use city property, we then can keep the costs of the solar garden down. One site that looks very promising is there is some agricultural land that is over by Sam's Club, kind of off the airport, and it's just north of Airport Road. We're looking at that. We're in discussions right now with the FAA, making sure that if we put it there, that there's no restrictions and it works in harmony with the airport and all of the functions around the airport. So that's one site. There's some land near the dog park that we're kind of considering. That would take a little bit more, what would you say? We'd have to get it ready. There's a lot of scrub and brush and things like that we'd have to get that site ready. We've looked at other sites, both on this side of I-35, and then there's actually a little bit of property on the east side of 35. Hmm. Our goals in this is, we've also at least briefly talked about putting it on roofs. Roofs. All right.
Depends where you're from, right?
Or if you have a dog or not, roofs. We really want, with our first project, we're the URAB, which is our advisory board, really wants to put this in places where people can see it and see that it's there. If we put it up on roofs, it seems like it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. So maybe our second or third project may be utilizing roofs, but in this particular case, we'd like to do it where it can be seen and make it more where you can gain information about what our solar is doing.
Okay. I guess I'm curious why you need to see it, as long as we're benefiting from it. But that's a fair question.
To that point, many people, I would say most of the people, don't know that we have 15% of our energy coming from wind.
Yeah.
And the wind is only 8 miles away, but I get constant questions, I get a lot of questions about, how come we're not in wind? I said, we are in wind. Well, I don't know that we're in wind, and we don't do a good job, I think, getting that word out. And I'm hoping that with a solar farm that people can see, that will educate more people and get them more actively involved.
Okay, good point. Well, before we bring in Steve, I just want to quickly ask about how many people we need to make this project successful. How many people need to sign up?
A lot of it depends upon how big the solar farm is and how much they want. You had mentioned a megawatt and a half. I'm encouraged to see that this may actually grow to be about 2 megawatts. We're getting a lot of interest. My dental hygienist said I have to bring a form over to her, and she wants to be the first one to sign up. So the moment we get those sign-ups, you want to be first? All right. Okay. There's going to be about 5 people that will be first.
Just tell us all we're first.
How about a lottery?
Yeah.
We need a lottery.
Well.
To who gets to be first.
I hope that there's that much turnout that we do have to say, you know what, this project is so going so well, we got to start planning the second. But with that, one thing to mention, too, with a megawatt or 2 megawatts, you're talking about 8 to 10 acres of land, and that's not easy to find in and around Ames. And That's right now our biggest challenge as we move this project forward. We're ready to go basically with the RFP. We're working on the marketing program, but it's the land, and if we have to go through the FAA, that takes a while. If it's land that needs to be worked, that's going to take a little while, and that's really kind of our critical path.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting. I'd like 20 acres, so we're ready to add on.
Okay.
But anyway, but thank you, and I'm going to just turn it over to Anne.
And I'm going to jump in. So one last question before you move along. Are you ready to unveil this name that you like?
All right. This is Don's name. Okay. I want to call it the Ames Municipal Electric Solar, or Ames.
Oh.
No. Okay.
I'm with Susan.
I think it's kind of cool, but it might be a little bit confusing. Well, thanks. Thanks, Don. This is really helpful to have a chance to learn more about where the city is headed with this. The most exciting thing I heard was that there sounded like there might be more than one project.
If we can get enough participants in this first one, I want to make sure that everybody who wants solar has an opportunity to have solar in their mix.
Great. Well, thank you. Well, now we're going to turn to Steve Bernard from Cedar Falls. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing wonderfully. Thank
Great.
You.
Great. So I understand that Cedar Falls has already developed Iowa's first municipal community solar project, Simple Solar, and that you've been generating solar power in Cedar Falls since 2016. That's very exciting.
Yeah, we're closing in on our one-year anniversary of having it operating.
Wow.
So we're excited about that.
We're very impressed with what Cedar Falls has accomplished, and we're looking to hearing about your success story this morning. Can you tell us right now what's happening in Cedar Falls with community solar power? How many people are signed up?
Yeah, we went through a lot of the similar processes that Don explained. And, you know, we're really fortunate here that we had over 1,250 participants decide to purchase into the solar array. So 1,250 households or businesses. So we were very pleased with our participation, and that allowed us to build a solar array that was a 1.5 megawatt unit. And as Don described, it took 8 acres of land here to do that. But we were very, very pleased with the response from our community.
Well, we look forward to learning a lot from you guys. In fact, it's always great to have somebody who's paved the way for us. I note that you're part of business development for the utility. So was that part of your marketing work? How did that take place? Well, how'd you get those customers?
Yeah, we went through a pretty lengthy process, really, in terms of customer enrollment. We actually went through a pre-enrollment process, I guess I would call it, to try to determine how much interest there was going to be in the community. And we allowed that pre-enrollment and early interest kind of dictate how large of an array we were going to build. So we started that process in the spring of 2015 by sending newsletter articles out to all of our customers. We held open houses where community could come in and ask questions. We kind of explained what we're proposing here. And then we sent direct mail pieces to every household and did basically a pre-enrollment campaign to see just how much interest there was going to be, how many customers were going to commit to subscribing to this, and at what level, how many units or shares of the project they were going to buy. And then once we had a pretty good handle on that, we were able to kind of complete our purchase agreement with, as Don described, an RFP to build the project, and then circle back to customers to do a final enrollment with them.
So when you started your marketing efforts, were those in-house or was that something that you contracted for?
We did that in-house. We've got a marvelous marketing group here, and it was a tremendous amount of effort and really a wonderful success.
Interesting.
We had TV ads. We customers who pre-enrolled picked up yard signs and put those all out over the community, which was really neat to see yard signs popping up all over the place with our Simple Solar logo on it. And customers were very proud to be participating in this.
So was there a champion in the community? How did this enthusiasm come about? I'm really curious about this.
Yeah, there was, I would say, a relatively small group of community members that came and visited with us about solar. Several of them were at the university. Several of them were just independent citizens and had a real interest in that. And we visited Farmers Electric Cooperative down in Kelowna. Warren McKenna had a smaller solar array down there. So we visited that and kind of got a sense for what they were doing. And there had just been kind of a building interest in Cedar Falls on solar. So that's really what pushed us in this direction. And we thought this was a great way to, you know, provide an alternative to customers who were maybe looking for a better option than putting solar on their own home. We hoped that we could find a lower cost of entry by doing a larger project. So someone didn't have to invest, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 to put a solar project up. They could get in at a much lower level by participating in a group project like this.
Well, speaking of investment, what is the level of investment that Cedar Falls ratepayers have to get into this?
Yeah, the minimum amount is $270 for us. That'll buy one unit of the project, which is equivalent to about 170 watts of solar output.
Okay,
we really wanted to keep that number somewhere under $400 because we were hoping to get pretty broad participation.
Okay, so I'm a little challenged here. 170 watts. What's that really mean? How do you explain that to a consumer?
Sure. That's it's a little less than a half of a solar panel is okay. One way to look at it. And we worked with consumers and let them know, you know, based on their household usage, what kind of percent of their usage that might be, and try to help them put it in some economic terms as well. That would produce a credit to them at today's rate of around $15 to $20 a year for a credit on their bill for each unit that they would purchase.
And so most people, do they purchase one unit or do they purchase more?
You know, it's a big variety. We had a number of people purchase one unit. We've had some individual homeowners purchase up to 50 units. So it's been a really big variety there. Most, I would say, are in the 2 to 3 unit range is probably the most common.
So if a person, let me see how this works. So let's say that I kind of come into this and I'm a little bit nervous and I decide to buy one unit. But then after about a year or so, I think, hey, this is pretty cool. And I decide I want to up my investment. Can I do that in Cedar Falls?
Not easily, because our project is fully subscribed.
Aha.
So we are planning once a year to evaluate to see if we have extra units that might have been sold back to us. That would be available then for resale, essentially. But generally speaking, there's not a lot available, and there probably won't be until we at some point build a second project as well.
Yeah, we heard Don say that this morning, that they're already thinking a second project.
Yeah, right.
So since you can't sell more right now, I guess I'm kind of curious as to how do you maintain this project in the community's eye? How do people know about it?
Yeah, good question. We did build ours in a location that's very visible to the public and very accessible. And, you know, Don mentioned the importance of that. We felt that was a very important item for ours also. And we were fortunate because the location is critical. We were fortunate early on in our project to find a location that was city-owned property. They had about 8 acres of kind of unused scrub area adjacent to a city park, and which gave us a nice south exposure, which, of course, is important, and was not in a shaded area, which also is very important. So this area has bike trails right by it. It's got a lake nearby. It's a very active area for folks that are biking or running at this particular park. So it's accessible to the public and pretty visible.
Well, it sounds like, not to make a bad pun, but all the stars align themselves for Cedar Falls in this effort. But I've worked on a lot of committees, and so I want to know, how'd you get that name, Simple Solar?
You know, that was our internal marketing folks that came up with that. Yeah, I'm kind of like Don. I'm the technical, engineering, financial type. I wouldn't have come up with a very good name, so fortunately we had some folks here internally that came up with a great name for us.
All right.
And then the reason behind that, the idea behind Simple was we really wanted to make this simple for customers to participate in it. And part of that is, again, trying to find a low cost for entry. We allowed customers to pay for it over 12 months if they wanted to put the payments on their utility bill. We have a process whereby if they move out of town, that we will buy their units back from them, you know, at a discounted rate, but we will buy them back. Or they could transfer them to another property owner in Cedar Falls. So we tried to remove a lot of the barriers for them and make it pretty simple to participate. And then it's just also simple from the perspective that they don't have to worry about putting it on their own home and punching holes in their roof to mount panels, and they don't have to worry about the maintenance. You know, it's professionally managed. So all of those elements led to the naming of it as Simple Solar.
Well, I think it sounds like you've achieved your goal here. I don't know if Don really needs to hire a consultant. Maybe he just needs to come and talk to you.
You know, we've been talking a lot to Cedar Falls.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yes, yeah, we're glad to share our ideas on what went well and what didn't go so well. And it's been a challenging project. It's been a very productive and rewarding project, but it is a challenging project to manage, particularly the customer side of this, the enrollment, and making sure we get things correct in our billing system, provide the credits, and receive the payments. And, you know, it's a fairly hefty task to get all of those kind of behind-the-scenes details worked out. But for us, it's been well worth it because it's been a really nice community project.
Well, we want to congratulate you on what sounds like a really successful effort, and also want to thank you for taking the time to help tell folks in Ames a little bit about what you're doing and showing us really that there is a way forward. And wrapping up, I just want one quick question. I know some of our listeners will want to know more about Community Solar in Cedar Falls. Where's the best place online for them to get information?
Yeah, our website, cfu.net, as in Cedar Falls Utilities.net. You can go under our Save Energy tab there. And there'll be information there on our Simple Solar project. We also have essentially a dashboard, if you will, that shows its performance hour by hour. It pulls up graphs and will show you actually instantaneous energy being produced from the array. And you can access that from our website as well.
Well, that's very impressive and very awesome. And thank you, Steve Bernard, Cedar Falls Director of Customer Service and Business Development, for joining us this morning. We look forward to your continued success.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you, Steve Bernard, and also thank you, Don Com, for joining us this morning and sharing your experiences in helping our community move toward this very important transition to solar-generated energy. Please keep up with the APA activities on the Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page. We also have a website, amesprogressivealliance.org. You can also get a copy, or we will post today, this radio show, and you can also follow the latest developments of the Ames Community Solar Initiative on our Facebook page and website. Just quickly want to mention a couple of things that you will find on our Facebook page. Upcoming events tomorrow, City of Ames Eco Fair in the Community Center. We'll have a booth there. Please come and see us. A lot of interesting things to see. Tomorrow, also happening, Kittical Mass will be gathering at Brookside at 10 a.m. And in the afternoon, also at Brookside at 2 o'clock, the Black Lives Matters march and rally. There were a number of other things coming up. Quickly, I'll also mention the town hall meeting scheduled for Tuesday, April 25th at 5:30 at the Ames Public Library to discuss how our community will be welcoming refugees. So, yes, many more things listed on the Facebook page. Please take a look, and thank you so much for this opportunity with KHOI.
Thanks once again for a great, informative, interesting, and fun visit from Ames Progressive Alliance for this month. As I was sitting here listening to this, it's just so exciting because, you know, I've heard you speak about this several times, and it's just getting so much closer to reality. And that's really encouraging, and it shows, I think, the power of grassroots community activism, but also collaboration with the local government. So it's a really wonderful model. Congratulations.
Yeah, we want to thank Don for his leadership in this. And Gail is absolutely right. This comes from citizen involvement, a listening government, and a government that's willing to look to the future.
Well said. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I'm your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to our earlier guests in the show, Sean Appleton Carlton, who talked about the Black Lives Matter march and rally in Ames on Saturday, and also Kate Puttick brought us information about Dawat, an Indian cultural feast and fundraiser that will be on Sunday. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI. It's easy to do. Go to our website and look for the donate button. Our fund drive will be starting in a few weeks, but you can donate anytime. Local Talk is also a radio production training workshop, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you'd like to join the team, contact us at 515-292-2878 or through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.